Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Andy Martinez. I'm sitting here at North Campus broadcasting for KU Hawk Sports Radio. I'm joined here by my co-host, Andrew McCulloch, and our producer, T.C. Pearsall. Andrew, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. Obviously, a big game for my Cubbies tonight here. We're here to talk about some KU sports, and obviously, we're going to get things started with a kind of surprising outcome for the football team. 18-16 win over St. Joseph's. First time they have allowed fewer than 30 points all season.
Yeah, surprising not in the result. We both said KU could win. They could also lose. We said both. I think we were both just shocked by the score. 18-16 was not what we expected with these two defenses playing against each other. Honestly, it was probably one of the worst games possible. It was not all that fun game to watch, but I don't think KU or any of the players will care because they got the win.
I mean, yeah, you're right. Even if the game might not be that fun for the fans to watch, you know what? As long as you get the win, even if it's an ugly fashion, that's all Tom Patrick really wanted and cared for. Obviously, we both agreed it was a must-win game, getting back to 500 on the season and now 2-1 in the GLVC. You know, it was a good win. You had a couple of guys on the offensive side play well with Lonergan, and then obviously Poindexter always shows up and plays well. It's kind of surprising to see KU miss all three of their extra points, though.
And a field goal.
It's a bad day for special teams.
It was a rough day for special teams, but not for the kicking game, at least.
Kicking.
Because Mason Murray, the punter, gets GLVC Special Teams Player of the Week. So, you know, that's one thing they're going to have to improve on. Because the kickoff coverage has been just rough all season long. They give up that long touchdown run against Southwest Baptist. And teams just get great field position off kickoffs against KU, and that can really swing momentum. If you get two quick touchdowns, if you're KU, and then you go off and kick it off, and they return it back to your 35-yard line, well, the momentum shifted all from KU just straight back to the other team. And that's just killer. And eventually it's going to start catching up to the Hawks.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So 18-16 win there. Would you say that KU's defense was really good, or was just St. Joseph's offense not really clicking?
If you look at just the scoreboard, you would say just straight up KU's defense was great. They needed to do what they needed to do. They gave up 436 yards of total offense, 262 passing yards, 174 rushing yards. This is just a case of getting stops when they needed to. KU defense got the stops when they needed to. A lot like against Southwest Baptist. They didn't necessarily stop them on St. Joe's 30-yard line or something for its punt, but they were stopping them and forcing four-down conversions and getting the ball back for the offense and just stopping St. Joe's from getting on the scoreboard.
Yeah, it's a really good start, I think, you know, for the defense. Sure, I mean, they got outgained,
85
for offense. St. Joe's played a really sloppy game, 11 penalties for 125 yards. Just surprising there. But also time of possession, pretty split. St. Joe's just had the ball for 20 seconds longer than the Hawks. So
this is a very even game.
Yeah. But, you know, while the defense, you know, that's a step in the right direction. Something that I'm not happy with is, you know, KU scores 18-10 there with 137 left, but they allow St. Joe's to come right back and score a touchdown. Now, they did make a final stand, and they did stop them from getting that two-point conversion to tie the game and potentially send it to overtime. But, I mean, they went 65 yards in just 50 seconds, did St. Joe's. So, I mean, that's just something there that I'm a little worried about still, not being able to stop them when you – I mean, even – yeah, sure, you said that they were able to stop them when they needed to throughout the game. But in, like, crunch time like this, you know, and clutch moments, I want to see KU excel on the defensive side of the ball too. And, you know, maybe they're not there yet, but, you know, that's probably the next step for me.
Yeah, I think – well, at least since we've seen them play two games and we've seen them and we followed them week in and week out, one thing that we're starting to realize is these hurry-up teams, no-huddle teams, give the KU defense a lot of fits. And I'm not saying St. Joe's was running hurry-up, no-huddle every single drive of the game, but that last possession was a hurry-up, two-minute drill, and they marched down 65 yards in five plays. KU's defense has struggled all season long to be able to contain that no huddle for whatever reason. Against Southwest Baptist, they did enough to stop them. They couldn't do it last week. It was just a struggle for KU to be able to stop that whole that whole run and the no huddle Oregon style offense that's becoming popular in college football today.
Yeah, and you know, they struggled to stop one person in particular for the Pumas, and that was quarterback Wade Bertrand, but not just like through the air, but on the ground as well. He had over 100 yards on the ground, 144 to be exact, 6 yards a carry. He scored twice on the ground. Now through the air, he wasn't as successful. He had, you know, 262 yards, 18 for 28. That's not bad completion percentage, but he had two big turnovers, was sacked twice. So that's something I like seeing from the QU defense, able to create turnovers again. That always will give you a lot of momentum for the offense. And then obviously, I mean, you know, this for me, it was a showcase of the quarterbacks kind of doing it all. You had Lonergan, who played really well. He didn't turn the ball over at all. Two touchdowns, no interceptions through the air with 228. Good completion percentage. And then he also had 83 yards on the ground. You know,
he's leading rusher for QU.
Leading rusher. You know, it was another game. Chris Harris kind of struggling a little bit. You know, he had 22 carries only for 50 yards. Darius Burse, he was able to get his on 10 carries, 48 yards. So a good performance on the ground from Lonergan and Burse. We obviously both have talked how Chris Harris probably isn't healthy. So, I mean, we'll give him a pass. And then you just talk about Eric Poindexter. This guy, he shows up every single game, and he gives the Hawks, I mean, he's just the one threat that the defenses can't allow to make big plays, but he continuously does it week in and week out.
If you give him 1 yard, that's 1 yard way too much. He is that good of an athlete, where if you give him 1 yard, that's all he needs to be able to catch, get a little bit of separation, and break down the field to make an 8 yard gain into a 24 yard gain, or a 24 yard gain into a big 70 yard touchdown play. He is that good of an athlete. We mentioned it in the pregame the preseason podcast. And if you go watch a QU football game for one reason, make it Poindexter, because he is a heck of a football player to watch, and he is so much fun. He's electric every time he gets the ball in his hands.
Yeah, that's the perfect adjective, electric. I mean, he makes 5 yard plays into 20 yard plays. You know, he had two big touchdowns, 29 yards, 20 yards from Lonergan. And he's just he's a difference maker on the offensive side of the ball. And usually QU's got those three difference makers that we always talk about in Poindexter, Harris, and Lonergan. With Harris injured and Poindexter able to step up and, you know, even, you know, produce more than maybe he would even usually produce, it's a big thing for the QU offense. Now, they only scored 18 points. Probably would have been 21 had we converted all three extra points. But, you know, it's good to see the defense finally at least, you know, pick up the slack a little bit and help out the offense. Like, as you said, to open up, it wasn't exactly, you know, the most fun game to watch. It wasn't exactly the cleanest game to watch for either offense. You know, kind of an ugly game. But at the end of the day, Padgett's got to be pretty happy to get things done.
Yeah. One of the things I wanted to bring up, here's a proposition. If you're Tom Padgett, put on your coach's hat, or I guess he wears a visor, doesn't he? Put on Coach Padgett's visor, to take the sideline, and you have to drum up a play for Eric Poindexter. Would you start having him run some wildcat or having him run some end reverses, little plays like that to get him the ball, not necessarily through the air?
I mean, not regularly. If you sprinkle those kind of plays in and catch the defense on their toes, yeah, I mean. Yeah, I think you could make something work like that. Obviously, with how electric he is, he's fast, great burst of speed. He could turn those kind of, you know, little, you know, reverses, wildcats into big plays. I think it's a good idea with how the game of football is being played right now. I mean, obviously a lot of teams are going through the spread offense. A lot of people think the wildcat was the future. You've seen teams like we talk about Oregon all the time. We've seen teams like Oregon with these, you know, plays like this that end up going for big yards. So I think, yeah, not a bad idea for Poindexter maybe to be inserted in those kind of packages.
Yeah, the reason I think of that, because you know you're going to start getting those double teams, and you're going to start getting, you know, the safety coming in over the top to help in coverage. So that's going to eliminate his touches, and that's going to make your offense that much more predictable. If you sprinkle that in there, you have a run in motion. Even just having him run in motion from one side of the field to the other, snap it, and then, you know, have him open for a quick slant pass, that might even, you know, just change the whole dynamic of the offense. But you have him run around and end around, pick up the ball, break through the sideline for a 20-yard gain down the sideline. Well, now the defense has got to say, do we put double coverage and get completely burned on an end around like that? Or do we run double coverage like that, and then it's a fake, and then we've got two guys open on the right side if he's coming from the right side? It makes the defense think on their feet, and it makes them respect every single element of the QU offense, especially Poindexter.
Well, yeah, and if not only does it make the defense think, it throws a monkey wrench into the game plan for defensive coordinator, for head coach. So we're presented with Poindexter double coverage. I think there you could do that, or there's two other things you could do. One is, like you said, quick routes, slants, anything quick that gets the ball.
Which he's quick enough for.
Yes. You got to rely on other receivers to step up their game. Your Cody Woods, your Owen Schoenenbergers, those guys to step up. If Poindexter's being double teamed and he's never exactly taken completely out of the offense, but QU has a lot of other talented receivers on the team with Wood and Schoenenberger. So those guys would have to step up too, I imagine. So, but I would never say Eric Poindexter would be completely taken out of the offense, even if he was double teamed and double coverage, whatever you say.
Yeah, so QU gets a big win. They go to 2-2, and now they got another home game. William Jewell comes into town. This William Jewell's team, they've gotten back. They got back on their feet last week. They beat Missouri S&T 40-16, but before that, they were 0-4. Including a 34-9 drubbing against St. Joseph's. You got to think QU's favored in this, right?
Absolutely. Not only are they favored, but they better win. Ride the momentum from homecoming into this weekend. I mean, it's another home game. It's fall break, so hopefully there will be some students around that stick around and end up making it to the football game, show their support for the Hawks. With William Jewell, The question is, are they going to be able to ride that big win against Missouri S&T, which was on the road, into Quincy? And, they're 1-4 on the season. They're not having a very good year. And I think, obviously, the Hawks are going to win this game.
Yeah, I would be really, really shocked if QU doesn't come out with a W here. All the signs point to it. Just based on, what kind of team William Jewell is. And just what QU has been like, and the momentum that they have, it's an 18-16 win. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't anything like that. But that's the kind of wins you want to have. If you can win those kind of ball games, that says a lot about your football program, and it gives the team a lot of confidence going into this week.
Yeah, I think it's almost more of a confidence boost to win these ugly, fought out games that just absolutely drain you at the end of the day than it is to win big, like 40-16, like William Jewell did. So I think QU, they have a lot of confidence right now heading into this game Saturday, and I think they'll get it done. Like you said, I think they come in with a lot more confidence than William Jewell.
I think what's going to be big for QU is they're going to be able to move the ball. I think they're going to be able to have balance against William Jewell. William Jewell's allowed 2,100 yards on the year, total yards, and they're averaging they're allowing an average of 425 yards per game. QU had 336 this week against a team they struggled with. Now a team that you should have success with. Who's to say that number can't go up to 425, 450, maybe even 500? And if you have that, I can't see QU winning by at least three touchdowns.
Yeah, William Jewell's defense is struggling really badly this year, allowing over 35 points a game. They're only scoring about 22. So I think this could go not only well for QU's offense, but with the defense only allowing 16 points this last week, William Jewell only scoring 21 a game, 22-ish, I guess, whatever you want to say, 21.8 to be exact.
Yeah.
But I think it could be another step in the right direction for their defense. If they can piece together two solid games in a row on the defensive side of the ball, this could be a 10-point win.
Yeah, and you think about you win this pass game against St. Joe's, gritty, hard-fought win, then you go out and you get a solid 2 or 3 touchdown win against William Jewell. Well, then you go against Indianapolis on the road, who is second in the conference right now. Well, tied for first at 2-0. And you've got a lot of momentum in your favor in terms of what you can do. And just that chip on your shoulder that, hey, you know what? We've won 2 in a row. We're 3-1 in the conference. We can go out and beat Indy. And, right now, QU sits at 2-1. They're game back of Indy and McKendree for the top spot in the GOVC. Think about that. You win this game, you have that chip on your shoulder, and you go out and beat Indy. You're talking about a conference championship for a team that was, a few years ago, had not won a single game.
You're right. Not only that, they're 2-1, third in the conference. And how hard have we been on them this year so far in their four games they've played? Yeah. They're 2-2 overall, 2-1 in the conference, though. You know, and we've pointed out so many flaws that they've had on the defensive side of the ball, or perhaps, you know, a lack of balance on offense. Yet here they sit, 500 on the season, one game above 500 in the GLVC, and you know they should win Saturday. So I don't see why they won't be 3-1 in the conference heading over to Indy 2 weeks from now. That's a big game coming up, you know, and McKendree even too down the road. They're 4-0 on the season, and, you know, they're on fire right now as well. So those are the two teams the Hawks are chasing in the GLVC. And, you know, hopefully, you know, QU is able to pull out a win here. Can you give me a prediction?
I'm going to go QU 42, McKendree 20.
42-20, wow.
Yeah.
I'm going to...
William Jewell against William Jewell. I think it was McKendree.
William, yeah, I did. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Brain fart. I'm going to go 38-21.
38-21. I don't think it'll be too close of a ball game for QU. I think this should be a game that they win favorably.
I agree. Hopefully they prove us right this time.
Yeah, we've been wrong a couple times with this team.
We have.
You really don't know what to expect. A team that really hasn't been as inconsistent or tough to predict has been the QU men's soccer team. They're kind of straightforward.
I mean, you called it. They beat William Jewell, and then they tie Rockhurst. You know, you predicted that 1-0-1. I was a little, you know, hopeful that they'd go 2-0 since Rockhurst was down a man.
Yeah, they were down a man and a coach.
And a coach.
Yeah,
yes.
On Friday against Truman State, Rockhurst got their goalie got a red card. The coach got a red card, so they were both suspended for the QU game. And then Rockhurst got a red card against QU. And QU could just not find a way to break down Rockhurst. Rockhurst is a stingy, stingy defensive team. Talking to a couple of the players on the team, they told me, you know, they're hard to play because they don't even try and score. They just want to make sure that you don't score, which, though, that's the toughest. If they don't want to win and they're just looking to tie, that makes it that much harder to break it down, because you're not going to have a counterattack. You're not going to have a break. You're just going to be pounding and pounding and pounding away. Eventually, you know, it's going to be difficult to find a way. And 110 minutes, you can find a way.
Yeah, and, you know, down one man and down your coach. Rockhurst was going into this game, I'm sure, just thinking, let's front load our defense. Obviously, it's going to be tough for us to score with 10 guys on the field, so let's make sure they don't score, and let's just get out of here with a draw.
Yeah.
I mean, they had to have been very happy with getting out of there 0-0 through 110 minutes, like you said. Quincy, 7-2-1 now. Both teams, 6-1-1 in the GLVC. So, they're right there neck and neck. Interesting enough, though, you know, red card for Rockhurst there in the second half with 63-40 left, and then Jordan Stevens gets a yellow card too there. A little bit of a tussle there between him and the Rockhurst player.
That's what it sounds like.
Elliot,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, up until that point, Rockhurst had been playing well with QU, and then after that it kind of just turned into a let's sit back and, you know, let's come out, let's go back to Kansas City with a
just
draw.
Just grind it out.
Because if Rockhurst tries to push it with one man down, then QU can score, and with 10 minutes, that much harder to even tie a game. And, you know, Rockhurst with a tie stayed in first place. With a loss, they fell back. So they, you know, you just play for a tie, and if you somehow get a win, then either way, you're in first place.
Especially on the road.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going into Quincy. You know, it's a tough environment to play at Legends Stadium against the Hawks. And not only do they end up with a tie with only 10 players, but they do outshoot the Hawks 12-10.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like either team didn't have their chances. While Rockhurst, you know, obviously front-loaded their defense and tried to make sure with everything they had that QU didn't score, and obviously they were successful, there were chances for both sides. You know, maybe just because there was 12 or 10 shots, though, maybe the chances weren't all that good.
Yeah, for QU now, it's kind of a weird position that they're in where they're, you know, in first place, but they're... It almost feels like they're not in first place, just the way that they've played. You kind of feel like this is a team that's not they're not at their top gear yet, which I don't know if it's scary or if it's starting to worry or if it's worrisome, because you're about midway through the season and you still haven't found your groove. It's, you know, you could look at it either as glass half full, glass half empty. You know, maybe, you know, that's worrisome for the rest of the teams down the road that QU is going to hit their top stride. But it's almost getting to the point where it's glass is half empty, because you're kind of like, are they going to find a top stride? Is it possible, or does this team have it?
It's interesting. You could look at it from either way. You could say, well, I mean, they're 7-2-1. They haven't really played their best soccer yet, So could that, I mean, could they, you know, take it to that next level, or are they just going to stay where they're at right now? I mean, as teams, you say it's tough or it's easy to predict them.
Yeah.
But I don't think it is.
Yeah.
I don't think it is that easy to predict them. I mean, this is a young team. You got to remember they've got more freshmen than sophomores, juniors, and seniors combined.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, while they've got their score, you know, their scores and you know, X, Taylor Reese, they've got their playmakers. They don't have that one superstar. We've talked about it. I mean, the entire season. For me, this is a tough team to predict. I mean, they've got a tough four-game road trip coming up with Drury and Missouri S&T up first. And I mean,
and Drury's a team that made it to the NCAA tournament last year.
Yeah,
they're 4-4-2 overall and 4-2-2 in the GLVC. They're sitting in sixth place in the GLVC. This is a good game you could overlook, and you could get bitten in the butt because Drury's a solid team. You know, they were in the NCAA tournament last year. They gave KU fits in the NCAA tournament. So, you know, this isn't a guaranteed W, or this isn't going to be an easy game for KU. And then you turn around, you get Missouri S&T, who's 5-3 in the GLVC and 5-5 overall. It's not an easy road trip for KU at all.
It's not. And, you know, you make that point. It's, you know, you can't overlook these games. And, I mean, I don't think you can overlook any game. Like I said on Friday in our preview show, I think every single team is putting that bullseye on KU's back and saying, we're going to give you our best shot after the season you had last year. You guys have the, I mean, they have the bullseye on their back. They were the team to beat last year. They had an amazing season. Everyone's going to come at them with their best shot. And, I mean, I feel like with Rockhurst and KU up at the top there, I mean, this is a tough four-game road trip. It's going to say a lot about who's going to be at the top of the GLVC in a, you know, in a week or so, or a week and a half, whenever all four of these games are going to be played through.
Yeah, and the third game of that road trip is the big one for me, is against Bellarmine, who's third in the GLVC, sitting at 5-3, 7-4 overall. And it's at Bellarmine. And the last time KU played at Bellarmine, they lost 4-1, it was, against Lynn University in the Final Four. So, you know, they might, you know, it's obviously not against Lynn. It's obviously not the Final Four, but you might want to go back there and say, hey, let's prove our worth here, Ben, and let's get a win here again.
Yeah, you said it. Absolutely agree with you there. Hopefully they don't have any demons from last year's Final Four game. You got to put that behind you. It's a new season. You know, I think this team has a lot to prove in these next four games. They're 7-2-1. They're having a good season. Obviously, that's a really good comeback after last year. So, I don't know. What do you think with these next couple games? How do you think it's going to play out for the Hawks?
I think they go 1-0-1. I think they tie Drury. I think they beat SNT. I think they tie Drury. But at the same time, you know, I'm not surprised. I won't be surprised if they go 2-0. I won't be surprised if they go 0-2. Or I won't be surprised if they go 1-0-2 and we'll beat Drury and tie Missouri SNT. Anything could happen with this team.
Yeah, I think, you know, 1-0-1-1 is possible, too. I mean, even tying both teams, losing one and tying one.
Yeah.
That's why I say it's so hard to predict for this team, because this is a big road trip coming up. You know, we don't really know their resolve yet. They haven't really had a lengthy road trip like this before. And I mean, we talked about Truman State, who's on a four-game winning streak, and they're 5-3-2. They're coming. I mean, all these teams are tough challenges for the men's team. So, you know, you never know.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting set of four games for the KU men's soccer team, as it will be for the KU women's soccer team, especially coming off their first loss of the season.
First loss of the season.
To Rockhurst, 1-0. This, you know, we talked about the emphasis of a 2-0 weekend for the Lady Hawks. They've been getting a lot of 1-0-1s, 1-0-1 weekends. Well, they get a 1-1 weekend.
Yeah, they do.
Which is
they
a
do
lot
us,
worse.
They
than,
do us even worse
yeah,
here. Yeah,
yeah, a lot worse than a 1-0-1 weekend.
And we continuously week in and week out say this is the week they're going to do it. This is the week they're going to go 2-0 on a weekend set.
Yeah.
Are they ever going to do it?
It's getting to that point, and they dropped pretty far in the rankings this week. They dropped from 6 to 22. So, you know, maybe,
I mean,
it's getting to,
the,
you know,
they should though, because Rockhurst is just a middle of the pack team.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally agree.
Yeah.
But I'm starting to look at it and say, you know, they're fourth in the GOVC, 4-1-3, 7-1-3 overall. They're behind Missouri, St. Louis, Truman State, and Bellarmine. They haven't played two of those three teams. Do you start wondering, is this team going to make the NCAA tournament? Yeah. They beat the defending 2-time national champions. But they're fourth in the Great Lakes Valley Conference. Provided unless they make a run in the GLVC tournament, are they NCAA tournament worthy?
I mean, this four-game road trip, we emphasized how big it was for the men. It's even bigger for the women. The men got to play Bellarmine, Missouri, S&T, Drury, all those teams too. But they're even better in
yeah.
the women's.
Oh, yeah.
In the
oh,
women's,
yeah.
I mean, you got Bellarmine at the top.
Top. They're
S&T
undefeated. Yep.
At the top. Drury right behind Quincy. It's gonna be tough. I mean,
yeah, it's a huge four-game stretch for the KU woman, and it starts. You need to get at least two to three, ideally three wins. In a perfect world, all four wins to guarantee yourself. I think if you do that, you should play yourself into the NCAA tournament, provided you don't.
If they lose one of these games, it doesn't matter against who. If they lose one of these games and then win the rest of the three, does that put them in a good enough position, or do they have to at least tie?
I think if you're going to lose one game, it has to be against Bellarmine, because I think Bellarmine will be that top dog in the region, or at least close to being the top dog in the region. And if you say, oh, well, we have two losses, one of them against Bellarmine, who's an NCAA tournament team, then you can still have an argument. But, you know, if you go out there and, you know, you lose to Missouri S&T, who's last in the conference, you know, I don't think that'll happen. But if that does happen, even if you tie against them, it's like you're starting to lose credibility in terms of can you make it into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I agree. I think going 2-2 on this road trip would be killer for
yeah.
them. You can't go 2-2. You know, and as harsh as that sounds, considering they just had their first loss, I mean, that's what happens when all these ties. You know, these ties have hurt the women's team.
They eventually come back and butt you in the butt.
And like, you've been preaching it pretty much the entire season.
Yeah,
like yeah, you've pretty much said it. You know, oh, you keep tying these teams. You know, tying teams that you should be beating, it's going to come back and haunt you at the end of the year.
Just think if your record instead of 7-1-3 is 9-1-1, or even 8-1-2. It looks a heck of a lot better than those three ties. It's just a matter of, yeah, you know, it's fine if you tie a game, maybe even a game, two games, but if you start doing it regularly, that's not a win. And you need wins to get into the NCAA tournament and get into the GLVC tournament. And it's starting to get to the point where, you know, even if they'll make the GLVC tournament, they'll be a four seed. They'll be a four seed. They won't host. They'll host one game, but they won't host the tournament. And you'll have to travel on the road for a tournament, try and win two games on the road. Because at that point, that's probably when your best bet is to make the NCAA tournament, is winning the GOC tournament. So you start running into a whole lot of, you know, what ifs that you don't want to have. So you need to have a good four-game road trip here in order to play yourself into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, and what's most disappointing to me about, you know, going 1-1 this last weekend is that it was at home.
Yeah.
You lose 1-0 at home against Rockhurst. This is the worst time to be blanked
yeah.
on offense. Like, this is a team that's been scoring goals all year. Ashley Burton's been killing it all year.
Abby Pulliam has been killing it. She
all
finds
year.
A groove
hat-trick.
A hat trick against William Jewell.
Yeah. And what? I mean, they had obviously. I mean, not literally, but they pretty much had a hangover against Rockhurst.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
literally, could be a possibility too, but,
maybe, but
highly doubtful.
But either way, like you can't get shut out by Rockhurst.
No, you cannot.
This is a team that's in the middle of the pack at home. This is a game that you should win 2-0, 3-0, just like the William Jewell game.
Yeah, and you know, maybe it's you're overlooking Rockhurst. Maybe there's a million possible reasons for why they might have lost that game or what could have happened, but. The bottom line is you needed that win. You needed it badly. And it's starting, and that's a game that if you look at the end of the season, you say, we were that first team out of the GOVC tournament. That game is the one you circle and say, if we win this game, we're in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, and I mean, we're looking at stats right here against Rockhurst. 5 corner kicks for KU to 0 for Rockhurst. 13 shots on goal. You had your chances, but you couldn't put it in the back of the net. It's concerning to me that you couldn't do that against Rockhurst. I mean, I know it's only one game, and I know it's your first loss of the season, but you got to save these losses for teams like Bellarmine.
Yeah,
I mean, I know you hate losing to anybody, but if you're going to lose to anybody,
you got to
lose
team.
To the top teams in the conference.
Lose to Bellarmine. Lose to Grand Valley State. Lose to one of the top teams up there where if you look at the end of the season, you say, yeah, we lost, but it was to one of the teams that's in the NCAA tournament, then you have an argument. when you lose to Rockers and you're if it's two teams with identical records and the one team lost to Bellarmine and the other team lost to Rockers, well, who gets in? It's the team that lost to Bellarmine.
That's up to the NCAA committee to decide there. So give me a quick prediction for the women's team this weekend.
I believe they go 1-0-1. I think they'll go back to their win in the
tie. I agree. Prove it to me that you can go 2-0.
Yeah. Until they do it, I'm not gonna predict any more 2-0 weekends for the Lady Hawks.
All right, so it's a jam-packed show here. We're doing recaps and previews. We're not going to have another show this weekend. It's fall break. Our lovely friend Andy is going back home, but we will be back next week to recap everything that happened this weekend, so stay tuned for that episode. But for now, I'm Andrew McCulloch, and for Andy Martinez and TC Pearsall, I'd like to thank you guys for listening, and have a good weekend.